You are back with the conversation, Making Progress. Kauai residents in the Koloa area will hear the latest on recovery efforts from state, county, and federal officials at a meeting tonight. Additional meetings are scheduled later this week in Kilauea and Hanalei. We check in with AmeriCorps' Donovan Kabebe on the latest efforts to help the community get back to normal. Good morning, Donovan. So you actually got on the road yesterday. Tell us, what did you see?
We headed out in the morning to take a personal survey of the area and speak with the folks who have been activated to participate in the relief fund. Damage to the roadway is quite significant. I was surprised to see the effects of the amount of water that was flowing. The road crews have been doing a really great job. They've got one lane cleared out for emergency vehicles and ATV traffic. So we've been offered the opportunity to provide a supply line through that channel, but it looks like there's still quite a bit of work to be done to actually get the road open to the public.
So it's really worse than you thought?
Access.
It's really worse than you thought?
For me personally, yeah, I was not expecting to see the amount of damage that I witnessed. At every turn, in every watershed, there was significant damage. So the road crews have quite a bit of work left to do. And, you know, from my unprofessional observation, it's going to be several weeks before we really see a return to some type of normalcy as far as the highway to Hyena is concerned.
And I know when we talked to the emergency management officials last week, they were really hopeful that they would have some access by the 7th.
Well, they've achieved the goal of getting access in and out by vehicle, so that they're on track with that. But as far as opening up to the public, I don't see that that's going to be something we'll be privileged to for at least another couple of weeks till they've made some parts of the highway more secure and cleared out. There's still quite a bit of mud and debris left in a lot of the places that they need to clear out. So that's probably the most significant challenge with regard to access to the highway out there right now. But the community's banded together. They're strong and healthy right now. They have most of the supplies that they'll need. They've organized to keep people fed, and they're currently in a very secure position to manage themselves moving forward. There are so many agencies involved in the security and supply line needs. Infrastructure needs are being addressed by the state and the county, so all active agencies are working really well together right now, and honestly, I think that we're moving forward really well to open up access in several weeks as opposed to months, which was what they were talking about initially, is more like the time frame before we see real access happening on the highway.
And I think, you know, that storm that we saw, you know, was really record-setting as far as all the rainfall that dropped on that one night over that weekend. You do have a website up, and I know you've broken down kind of the wish list for certain areas. What are the priorities, you know, based on the location, the geographic location, and the needs?
Correct. Okay. And so anyone who's interested can follow along with the daily happenings at the Malama Kauai webpage, and that's also our VISTA programs porthole.
When we last talked the week following the rainfall and the flooding, you had talked about how some of your volunteers had their own homes kind of affected, and yet they were out there helping others.
Absolutely, and that just speaks towards the spirit of our community and the camaraderie that exists between the folks and neighbors here. You know, when there's a need, there's a high desire for folks to just kind of put aside their own personal issues and get the community going in a better place. And it's those actions that fortify everyone else. So we appreciate anyone and everyone who's stepped forward, and we'll continue to work together to rehabilitate the community and get us back on our feet adequately.
And hopefully tonight you'll get the latest on the funding that might be available to rebuild the highway, and then also the status of the FEMA, the disaster loans, if you know that comes through to help the community as well.
Yeah, those agencies are meeting in Honolulu right now, the Honolulu community, and so later on this afternoon we'll have a much clearer idea of what our options are moving forward, what services are available to the community from the various agencies that are active on the ground now. And so we're all kind of in a standing holding pattern at the moment. The biggest concerns coming out of the community at the moment are the security of their jobs and the ability to access those jobs that they haven't been able to get to. And they're primarily asking where they can get assistance to tend to the bills that are, you know, haven't been paid and probably won't be getting paid for at least another month. So that I know that the different agencies in effect now are addressing those concerns. Everyone's aware of what the major community concerns are, and I feel that where everyone is now, we'll be seeing much more action with regards to the community's needs as we move forward from here.
And you mentioned that there was a team meeting this morning over at, what, Hanalei?
Yeah, the Hanalei Courthouse. So several of the agencies that are on the ground moving, like FEMA and the county, have gathered together to talk to some of the community leaders and share what's happening with the county in regards to the relief effort. And so we should be getting a fresh update by noon from those folks, and we'll be updating our webpage appropriately by the afternoon.
Okay, and I know here on Oahu, they have opened up those disaster centers where residents could go to ask questions and ask for help. Mm-hmm. The city crews, I know, have been moving all the bulky items, you know, off the side of the road because mm-hmm. we were going to have, you know, more bad weather. But what's the situation there? I understand that, you know, there were some very large items still that the residents weren't able to haul out of there.
The neighborhoods have organized, and we are seeing action from our refuse companies and the county to provide trash service up on the North Shore where road access is hindered. Communities organized to make trash pickups and have that debris put and brought to a central location on the North Shore where it can be either trailered out or airlifted out. So, you know, I can't commend the county services enough for the action that they've taken to really assist and move forward this recovery program. And at this point, we're seeing the most clearest and coherent cohesion of affected agencies working together than we've seen in a long time. So things are moving along slowly. We're really encouraged for what will come. And,
well, that's good
honestly,
news.
We're witnessing a very speedy recovery process from this point.
All right. Well, good luck to you and your volunteers out there, and stay safe.
Wonderful. We appreciate that. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
All right. You too. That was Donovan Kobe'e. He is the project manager at AmeriCorps on Kauai. Again, the hope is that the crews will be able to get roadways cleared this weekend, if not sooner.
HPR is proud to open its 2018 Atherton summer season with a rare Honolulu appearance by shakuhachi grandmaster Riley Lee. The concert on the evening of May 19th in the intimate acoustics of the Atherton studio is sure to sell out, so get your seats today. Call us during business hours or purchase tickets to Riley Lee at hprtickets.org. Sponsored in part by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, a Garden Isle progress report, but first, your quiz.
Unihua, ulehua, unihaa. ukawa uahu umulokai ulanai umau ukahulabe uhangai.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we're recalling the life of a 19th century adventurer. He had been a gunrunner in the Caribbean and was later thrown in jail in the Dutch East Indies after colonial authorities accused him of trying to start a rebellion there. He escaped and found his way to the Utah Territory. After getting permission from Brigham Young to set up a Mormon colony in the Pacific, he came to the islands as a Latter-day Saints missionary in 1861 to establish a colony on Lanai, where he bought large tracts of land in his own name with church funds. Charges of embezzlement and abuses of Mormon doctrine led to his excommunication, but that didn't slow him down. He went on to serve the monarchy as a member of the House of Representatives, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Attorney General, Minister of Interior, and Secretary of War. And then in 1886 as Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Hawaii under King Kalakaua. It was quite a life, and we're looking for his name. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets our reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Shaka Tea, a ready-to-drink, caffeine-free tea brewed from Big Island Mama Key and no cane sugar added. Proud to support regenerative agriculture through farming Mama Key. ShakaTea.com.
State lawmakers and their staff spent the weekend preparing the final draft of bills for a floor vote this week. On Friday, legislators announced agreement setting aside $30 million to deal with the homeless crisis. Conferees want to create special zones for homeless. Some call them safe zones or Ohana zones or Kokua zones. It's not an approach state and county homeless coordinators fully embrace. Homeless villages have been tried at Ala Park and Haleiwa on Oahu, as well as on the Big Island recently, with limited success. On Friday, Representative John Mizuno shared a personal story about his brother, who died homeless, and how he hopes lawmakers' efforts this session will make a difference.
Never brought this up, but it has affected me and the way I think about homelessness and how we need to help our people. So I think that by passing a $500 million plus bill for affordable housing, that's the end game. And by passing over $50 million for homeless, that's a start game. And together, we can provide homeless stability and healing and eventually transition to permanent housing. I think this year is the most comprehensive year that we've ever dealt with in homelessness. Not only the funding, but the way we targeted it. We used many different approaches. And I think this is probably the greatest year ever for the Hawaii State Legislature in dealing with homelessness and affordable housing.
Lawmakers have been kicking the safe zone idea around for a decade now. The idea hasn't been warmly met because of concerns about where these sites will be established. Representative Della Albalati talks about the compromise that she hopes will have safeguards and flexibility.
So the $30 million is appropriated as a lump sum to the governor's office, to two agencies that he will designate, one that's going to be responsible for construction, another for homeless services. We are looking at sites on up to three sites on Oahu, one on Kauai, one on Maui, and one on Hawaii Island. We're giving the governor flexibility because he can identify the public lands that could be available. And we hope also, just like we're doing here today, to partner with the private community, the private businesses who can help us to bring up some of these Ohana zones quickly. You know, the model from the beginning has been Kawahiki villages. So we know that the governor's office has been working diligently, and we hope that they will move quickly with the funding that we provided them and continue to do the due diligence to identify the sites. We believe they're close to identifying some sites sites on Oahu, and we also know that they're in conversations with members of the county. I will also say that because it's a mix of funding and it's very flexible, what might work on Oahu may not work on Maui or Kauai. Kauai may be ready and quick to bring up something, and then they could use funds for operations. That's really going to be a discussion between the governor and the county representatives. So we were very clear that we don't want tent cities. We want to give the governor flexibility in the language of the conference draft. You're going to see that these Ohana zones are going to be on public lands. They can have certain secure dwelling spaces. They will have places like hygiene centers, possible communal kitchens. But again, we want to emphasize that it's going to be different for every island. So there's really going to be flexibility for the governor to work with the community as well as the purchase of the homeless service providers to design what an Ohana zone will be appropriate for a community. I think what we have to do is we're going to proceed carefully, and we trust that the governor will also proceed carefully. But we know that the not in my backyard doesn't really work anymore, because you know what? The homeless are in our backyards. They are on our streets, and we see them every day, every night, and we know that we have to do something. So I think this is the time for innovation. This is the time for creativity. This is the time to pull together. So we have been working with the governor's office, and we have some ranges. You know, we're looking at some sites that might require about $5 to $6 million in capital improvements. We know that to bring up some of these the services around these Ohana zones might be program costs of about $1.5 million. So it's not pulled out of nowhere, but it is a large number, because it represents the commitment of this House and Senate to address these problems and to give the governor, the county mayors, all of the community flexibility to find and design the solutions proper for our communities. I also think that the numbers that we're looking at are going to be manageable on sites that are manageable, and that we will have the kind of support services around these Ohana zones committed. You know, it's not a far leap. We do have the Family Assessment Center in Kaka'ako that is running well. That is another model that we have that can for other Ohana zones. So it's not impossible to do, and I think, you know, we've demonstrated as a community that we have homeless service providers that are willing to step up to run these places.
That was Representative Della Albalati at a news conference Friday afternoon announcing details of the homeless funding plan that will be voted on this week.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Douglas Trade Shows, serving Hawaii since 1983, producing annual trade shows and expositions, and providing management services for trade events. DouglasTradeShows.com.
As Representative John Mizuno mentioned, House and Senate conferees came to agreement on a plan to infuse $200 million into the Rental Housing Fund, as well as millions more in incentives to jumpstart projects. Our partners at Honolulu Civil Beat have a story today taking a closer look at the affordable rental incentives. Anita Hofschneider is on the line with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
So tell us, what were you able to find as you took this closer look at the money?
Yes, I should note, you know, the lawmakers did a lot for affordable housing this year, and my story focused on one aspect in particular, an exemption for the general excise tax that applies to new construction or refurbished construction of affordable rentals. But there's some debate over whether or not they're actually affordable.
And yeah, so share with our listeners about some of those numbers.
So the way that the tax break works, and it's a little complicated, so bear with me, is that developers will be able to claim this tax breaks on construction costs if they build new rental units or refurbish rental units that serve 20% of people who are considered low income in Honolulu. And that number changes every year, but this year it's less than $65,000 a year for an individual. So 20% of those units would serve low income people, but 80% could serve people earning up to 140% of the area median income, which this year is up to $114,000 a year. And so federal guidelines set what those income levels are, but they also set the rents. And so if you're earning up to $114,000 a year, legally the developers could charge you up to $3,000 a month per rent. And so the concerns that critics have is that $3,000 per month per rent for a one bedroom is more than market rent. And so they see this as, you know, they raise the question of why is the state considering subsidizing the development of rentals that are equal to or more than market.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy because we all know that the salaries, you know, aren't on par with the housing costs. And so $3,000 is a lot of money for rent.
That is. And so I should share, you know, what developers said when I raised this concern with them. And what they said is that, you know, they're not going to charge $3,000 a month for rent because there aren't enough people who can actually pay that. What they want is the flexibility to provide a mixed levels of rent within the same apartment complex. So, you know, 20% would be for low income people. But, you know, on average, the average rent could range. They're saying that, you know, this is necessary in order to kind of jumpstart construction of these units to expedite them. Because as you may know, that there's not that many apartment buildings in Honolulu. You're very likely to be renting in a house or renting a condo from its owner. They say that this is what's needed to encourage developers to actually build big apartment complexes that can really make a difference in our housing demand.
Right. And we have a lot of aging units, too.
We do, and it's important to note that this tax break would also apply to significant rehabilitation of those units. And there's a technical definition for that that I won't get into now. But if there's a really dilapidated complex, developers could claim this tax break for significantly refurbishing that and bringing those units back online.
Well, we hope that happens. I know the city had some issues with trying to maneuver a deal that would help upgrade some of the aging rentals, affordable rentals in the city. So we'll see what happens with this pot of money or the incentives with the developers. Thanks so much, Anita.
Thank you for having me.
That was reporter Anita Hofschneider with today's Reality Check. To read the full story, visit sybilbeat.org. Following last Thursday's show about regulating unlicensed care homes, we heard this.
Hi, this is Miley Harada, nurse case manager. I'm calling regarding the HB 1911. I just would like to say that although I am in support of safety measures being in place for the elderly, I believe that there's some language in the 1911 that's a civil right violation. First of all, I don't like the fact that the Department of Health might be able to just walk into residence. Many of my clients choose to live in group homes and have personal care services provided to them. And I believe that the 1911 is directly going after this kind of model. I believe that this model that we're calling the aging in place model, from everything I've seen, has been a very safe model. We have a lot of safety measures in place. Our group, my nonprofit corporation is called the Hawaii Platinum Group, and we are going to start certifying our AIPs. I think that we should be able to work with the state to provide great care for our elderly. Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Ann Freeman in Kalaua, Kauai. I just listened to Keith Ridley talk about this form that people need to use for complaints and this long, involved process to get it to be an electronic form. I would just like to suggest that he put up a link on the website to a PDF form that people can fill out and with instructions to then email it to a dedicated email box. Very simple. This is ridiculous. Thank you.
And thanks for the feedback. Email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Reach out via social media on Facebook or Twitter, or call our talkback line at 792-8217.
Have you ever tried to breathe through a straw? That's what some people say it feels like when they have a bad asthma attack. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Join me today on The Body Show. We'll talk with an expert about the best way to breathe with ease, even if you have asthma. That's today at 6:30 on The Body Show.
It's been a long haul for East Honolulu residents who fought to preserve the scenic views and cultural sites on the Ka'iwi coast and to ensure the health of Mauna Loa Bay. It covers everything from the wetlands to the fish ponds to the shoreline. There is much for the community to celebrate for its work in conservation. Anne-Marie Kirk is one of the driving forces behind the first Heritage Festival that's happening next weekend on May 12th. Welcome.
Hi, how's it? Aloha.
So I've known you for a while now, and I've covered many of these issues.
Yes.
So it's really kind of nice to see the community coming together to say, hey, we did something right.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a big celebration. It's a celebration of our area. It's a celebration of really our community members. We want to have this festival to celebrate their work, but also to share with them our ongoing projects and really being proactive in celebrating our community.
So what's maybe the one issue that's maybe at the forefront right now for your groups?
Well, actually, for the festival, our theme is Eho Mai I Vai Vai. It's about water. That is, we're asking for the abundance and prosperity and wealth of water. The deeper meaning is let those waters flow, whether they be in the mountains, in the ocean area, in our streams. And under that is even what's called a noahuna, elusive meaning. And that meaning is, as we ask this as community members to bring forth this abundance, we also need to be stewards of that and to treat our waters with aloha through how we feel in our heart and aloha of our hands and the work that we're going to do there. So that's the theme. Each of these groups are tied to water, from Malama Mauna Lua that does work in Mauna Lua Bay, to Huli, who does work at Paika Lagoon, Livable Hawaii Kaihui at Keawawa Wetlands, Mauna Lua Fish Pond Heritage Center at Kaniwai and Kalau Haʻihaʻi, MaunaLua.net, who I'm a part of, which is the sharing of those stories, and then Mauna Lua Community Foundation, who supports these groups in the work they do for water. It's going to be an amazing, amazing couple of days there at the Hawaii Kai Town Center.
Now, over the years, we've seen community cleanups and, you clean the invasive ogo up from the bay, and you help to clear the wildlife areas back in the valleys.
Yes.
It really has been a long haul for the community.
It's been a long haul. Sometimes when you have a boulder and you're pushing up that mountain, you don't think you're going to get to the top. I think we've pushed that boulder to the top on many issues, and we've come to a place where we can look down and say, look at all the work that we've done. You know, sometimes when it comes to community work, people get discouraged. Please don't get discouraged wherever you are. Continue that work because positive things happen, and we see that out in Mauna Lua, Mauka Makai, and we continue to do good work.
And a lot of this is really preservation and conservation. And a lot of it, I think, when you look back over the decades, it was the community reacting to development.
Yes. Yes.
Whether it's from Sandy Beach, all the way down.
Exactly. So we've been reactive because so many things have been coming at us. And we've come to a place in our community where we can understand these issues and how to work with the different state and county agencies, and how do we work these situations. But this is us not being reactive, but proactive. Proactive in our future, proactive in the care of water in our area, from our streams to our wetlands to our springs to Mauna Lua Bay itself that runs. Sometimes Mauna Lua Bay, people have a sense that it's just in the Hawaii Kai area. Mauna Lua Bay runs from Kawai Hoa, which is China Walls off of Koko Head, all the way to Le'ahi, Diamond Head. That is Mauna Lua Bay. All these communities were not separated. We are bound together by the waters of our area, and Mauna Lua Bay being that biggest body of water. But when you look at our springs, at Kaniwai Spring, for example, the waters of Kane and what it can teach us, the spring at Keawawa Wetlands, which is Kanehala, what are the stories that they can tell us? Not just the water itself, but what does the name mean? We have community members who have been coming out and doing community work for years now at Hawea Heiau. And what they're doing is they're not coming once. They're coming over and over again. So Mauna Lua is feeding the spirit of our community. And this is a celebration of that work.
And over the years, the community has come together to be able to better identify the cultural resources.
Yes.
All along that coast.
Yes.
And we saw what happened during the rainfall and all the destruction.
Yes.
When the waters came down the ridges like that. And we saw, 20 years ago when those large boulders came rolling down, I think, in Niu Valley.
Yes.
I mean, it really is amazing when you think of what Mother Nature can do.
In the space of 3 hours, on that Friday night, this recent one, I mean, I went from, wow, I think it's going to rain, to, oh my God, what's happening, you know, and having pumps out and brooms and moving water. And we've all been affected. Those in the community group, some of the people that are leading these groups have been very heavily affected by mud and water in their homes. And so we're dealing with that as well. Now, that's maybe an asking of too much water for our area.
Oh, whoa.
But what it says is how fragile these areas are. And we have something now which is really exciting, which is the watershed hui for Mauna Loa. So looking at places like Kamila Nui Valley and Kuli'o'o, because in those rains that happened 20 years ago, in fact, I didn't get home that night because the roads closed. I ended up spending the night at friends in Wailupe. And here we are 20 years later dealing with these same issues. So we have to look at our aina and look at how we're dealing with these issues. And that's that proactive that I'm talking about, and that's some of the things that community can learn at this festival.
Right. And so I guess when we're mindful of the rains that affected Kauai and East Honolulu,
yes,
we can count our blessings that it wasn't worse, but then again, an appreciation for Mother Nature.
When you look at Mother Nature, and especially live in Hawaii, which is an active place, I mean, we're surrounded by water, the spirit of the land, but I'm humbled by Mother Nature. I think we all are, and we can never be above it. What we have to learn is how to work in harmony with Mother Nature and understand there are times when there's things we just cannot control. So what do? Is we come together, community, and how can we work together? I mean, that interview you had about Kauai earlier was just amazing, what's going on there, and I have close friends that are there, and I know they're dealing with those issues, but as we move forward, how do we be proactive for the next time this happens? What can we do as communities on every island?
So what can we look forward to then on the 12th?
My gosh, what can you look forward to? It's going to be awesome. So we're going to have musicians like Tavana. We're going to have Mauna Lua there. We're going to have Mauna Lua performing with Kalehua Puakea Halau. We have Napuale Oliko Lehua coming from Waimanalo. We have Hokulea that will be there. And just as a reminder for those who are outside of Mauna Lua who might not know this, but Nainoa Thompson and Bruce Blankenfeld are both from that side of the island, as is Kalea Wong, who's from Kalama Valley, who is a navigator. And we're really excited that we're going to be celebrating the 17 identified areas of water in our area. And one of the people that'll be presenting is Keikai Maulu Lee, who's a great-great-grandson of the last konohiki of Mauna Lua, Jolu Kela. So we'll all be bringing the waters from these different areas together so people can learn about water. But throughout the week, the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Hokulea will do community tours from 3 to 6. And after that, every night we'll have entertainment. We have a really cool surprise guest on the Wednesday night. On Monday night, we have Kaiser coming with their ukulele class, and then Hokulea Talk Story, which is fantastic. Wednesday night, the 16th, is a special guest. I encourage everyone to come. It's going to be fantastic. And then the Friday night will be the closing ceremony, and we'll have more with Hokulea, and we'll talk every night. The community groups presenting will share what they're doing. So it's going to be awesome. Please come out. No matter what side of the island you're from, please come support us, because water binds us all together no matter what part of the island you're from.
All right. Thank you very much, Anne-Marie Kirk, for sharing the upcoming festival. That was Anne-Marie Kirk talking about the festival over at the Hawaii Kai Town Center coming up on May 12th.
Aloha, I'm Adara Panetta from the University of Hawaii Manoa School of Communications. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look into the simply massive universe around our ridiculously small planet, as we also get information on what to look for in our dark island skies. Christopher Phillips has it, our usual source for this stuff. Hey, Christopher, welcome back. What do you have this week?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be here. So this week, stargazers look out for Venus in the westerly sky after sunset. Also look out for Jupiter in the east around 7 p.m. and Saturn at 10:30 p.m. The moon is beginning to wane this week, but will remain a fiercely bright presence in our night sky till later on.
And you have been digging into some of the exciting data that came out relating to the map of the Milky Way.
Yes, astronomers from around the world have been poring over the release of the most comprehensive survey of the entire sky ever taken. This huge data release was the result of years of work from the Gaia Space Telescope. This remarkable instrument has been mapping the entire sky in visible wavelengths to create the most accurate 3D map of the Milky Way that humanity has ever created.
And we've been hearing a little bit about this since the story broke. Why is this important to you?
Well, by accurately mapping the positions and motions of stars in our galaxy, we are able to better understand the structure and evolution of our galactic home. From this data, we can also tell a great deal about the properties of stars themselves.
And Christopher, is this one of those things where it's kind of like the Vatican Museum in Rome, where literally you'd only have 10 seconds to look at each object in there and you'd be there for the next 300 years? Is this map just so massive that one person really can't take in the information in a series of lifetimes?
It would be impossible. And that's why astronomers from all around the world are having a go at this. But it's going to take other things as well. Machine learning is going to have to come into play, because a single human being just can't take it on, as you said. So computers and algorithms are going to be analyzing this data for years, probably.
That means maybe anything tangible in terms of something they learned from it might take years?
Absolutely. And this happens all the time, especially with big data sets in astronomy. We're still learning stuff from data that we collected back in the early part of the 21st century and even the latter 20th century.
There's one for a future Stargazer report, no doubt, and maybe many years down the road with a whole new host and everything. It's Christopher Phillips, and at HawaiiPublicRadio.org, you can take a look at an image he's provided to go along with the report this week. Thanks so much.
You're all welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. Catch you next week.
Support for Stargazer comes from Ferraro Choi, celebrating its 30th anniversary. Architects for the Culinary Institute of the Pacific, committed to environmentally sustainable architecture and interior design. FerraroChoi.com.
Earlier in the show, we told you about a 19th century figure who made his mark on Hawaii in religion, journalism, and government. He came to the islands to start a Mormon colony on the island of Lanai. The problem was he bought the land with church funds but registered it in his own name. That eventually got him excommunicated for embezzlement. Undaunted, he turned his energies toward local media and politics, starting his first newspaper, the Nuho, in 1873. 5 years later, he won election to the House of Representatives, and in 1880, he bought the Pacific Commercial Advertiser, the forerunner of Honolulu Star Advertiser. He later served the monarchy in several appointed positions, including the posts of Minister of Foreign Affairs, Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Hawaii during the reign of King Kalakaua. Sadly, fortunes of this American adventurer fell dramatically after the establishment of the 1887 Constitution of the Kingdom of Hawaii. Walter Murray Gibson fled the islands and died penniless in San Francisco in 1988. And today we have, or excuse me, 1888, we do have a winner, a Boyd Bond of Kohala, got the answer right. That is today's quiz, and if you have one, you can send it to TalkBack at HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Achieve 3000, a literacy program available to Hawaii students in grades pre-K through 12, offering Home Edition with parent support in 21 languages. Achieve3000.com.
Annetta Lucero is a competitive athlete who's managed to perform at the highest levels of her sport and to understand the mindset it takes to become a winner. She's a Guinness World Record holder holding baton twirler and a former Cirque du Soleil performer whose journey to the top of her sport called for her to overcome obstacles that could have easily defeated her. Her memoir is called The Tao of Winning, and she spoke with Chris Vandercook about it the other day.
For me, in my personal journey, I came to that fact just from living my life and having so much adversity, more than one would possibly imagine. And then I come to the place where I realize that every single human being has these adversities, and regardless of how large or small they seem, the approach that really saved me in my life was looking at that adversity not as something that was an enemy to me or something that I had to battle or fight, but looking at it as something that was the signpost and the stepping stones to where I was going, and to use the adversity to catapult me into a better way of thinking for myself and to aim for the beauty and the peace and the joy in all of the situations, regardless of what those situations were.
What was the nature of the of that adversity, just to help us understand that a little more?
I suffered a lot of abuse as a child, and I was born with three missing vertebrae, a brain cyst, systemic lupus, and epilepsy. So it was never considered for me to be able to be an athlete, and yet this athletic sport had been in my family for generations, and it was an expected it was an expected thing for the next generation to be able to take the mantle and take it all the way to the world championships
of baton twirling,
of competitive baton twirling, which, just to clarify, people sometimes get an immediate vision of a majorette marching in a parade, and that is absolutely not what I do and not what I have been trained to do. I'm an elite gymnast and a professional dancer, and toss a baton up 40 feet in the air doing major gymnastics and catching it in many different places. So it's a high-level, high-pressure, competitive sport. And I encourage anybody who hasn't seen the sport of baton twirling to go on YouTube and type in something like WBTF World Championships, and you'll see real athletes.
Well, it's what drew you, in spite of, you know, reasons, kind of a genetic inheritance to stay away from it. So you had a great deal more to overcome than others in your sport, right?
I really did, and I think in overcoming what I just had to overcome in life in general helped me to become the athlete that I eventually became, because I had practice in overcoming hardship and adversity, which is what you're dealing with every time you walk out onto the competition floor in front of 11 judges from many different countries and 10,000 people in an audience. And I could easily hold my own under that kind of pressure.
You know, Annetta, when you hear the stories of people who have reached excellence in one field or another, frequently as part of the mix of ingredients, there's a little bit of struggle and adversity in there in an awful lot of those stories.
I'd say way more than not.
Why do you think that is?
I think that life builds champions, and people who rise to the occasions of life, no matter what they are, they learn in life how to overcome. And in the field of competition, that's such an asset. And if you can do it without anger, you know, as a child, I did have a lot of anger, and I fought for what I wanted, and I was very disappointed, and I was very jealous, and there were a lot of these feelings that came in. And when I was 12 years old, I happened to run into some world-class coaches that took me under their wing, and they taught me so much more than my sport, and they really showed me a different way of thinking and living, and this is a lesson that I took with me for the rest of my life, even to this day, is to do things with peace and kindness to yourself, even as you push yourself. And when I learned that philosophy, I went from having won nothing in my entire career to suddenly being the youngest Grand National champion in the United States. And it happened in a matter of 3 months.
And that,
so it wasn't my ability that was lacking. It was my mindset that had not yet been prompted into a higher level of awareness. And when that happened, everything changed.
So, Annetta, that prior mindset, did that consist of you sort of being your own worst enemy in a competitive situation?
Absolutely. my own worst enemy in life and in competition. And all of the practice in the world and the talent that I had developed, it wasn't enough to make me that champion I so desired to be. And when my mindset and awareness developed and changed and became something that could offer beauty to myself and to the world, that opened a whole new level of thought and being and becoming, and that is when I began to flourish.
If someone else, you know, another athlete and a competitive athlete who suspected that he or she might be doing some of the same thing, if someone like that came to you for advice, how can I stop editing mm-hmm. myself, talking myself out of success, what would you say to them?
The first thing that I offer to people who do come to me in my sport or other sports and they want to know this information is, and this is true for sports or life, because everything in my book, The Tao of Winning, is not just about sport. It really is about life and how to find peace and comfort and health. And I think the primary focus in the beginning is to stop looking at others, to stop comparing yourself with others, stop comparing your routine with the other's routine, and really focus on what your best asset is. And when you can see the assets that you have to offer, you begin to develop those, and as those strengthen, your beauty and talent and effort begins to shine in a way that it never has before, because you don't have other people in the way of who you're becoming. That makes all of the difference in the world.
You don't have other people in the way, and you don't have yourself in your own way, sounds like.
You get yourself out of the way as well, because you start to see yourself in a new light when you're focused on your strengths and what you're capable of, rather than focused on what you're doing weaker than others and trying to catch up with them. I was very innovative in my sport and brought a lot of new elements. There are specific tricks that are actually named after me. There's a thing called the Lucero roll, and that would never have happened if I was trying to catch up with Susie Q. Smith, who was doing her best roll. If I was trying to learn her roll and do it better than her, I would not have accomplished that. I would not have succeeded. But when I began to look only at my own strengths and what I could do, and also appreciate the strengths of the others without trying to match them or copy them or overcome them, I could appreciate their strength and develop mine at the same time, and that just made my strength skyrocket, and it made me very untouchable in my sport.
Hawaii Island resident Aneta Lucero is the author of The Tao of Winning. You can learn more about her and her work on the Conversation Facebook page. A lot of different activities going on throughout the state. Morning Edition host and colleague Derek Malama joins us for a look at some of the events going on in our community that might be a little under the radar.
Yes, indeed.
Nice to see you.
Yeah,
I haven't had you on for
a while. It's been a while. I've been under the radar here.
Well, you have been. You know, if you're a visitor to the islands, May Day is Lay Day tomorrow in Hawaii.
That's right. And also, if you live here and you may have forgotten that tomorrow is May Day, on Oahu, the City Department of Parks and Recreation's 91st annual event includes a ceremony introducing the Lei Queen and Court, and also a Lei Contest exhibit. Entertainment will be provided by the Royal Hawaiian Band, Kamaka Kehao Fernandez, Hoku Zutermeister, and more. And this is happening from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., in Kapi'olani Park.
And if you're on the Big Island in Hilo, you can celebrate Lei Day at Kalakaua Park.
That's right. In connection with this celebration, the Palace Theater is offering historic films of old Hawaii from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this includes a lei-making film from the early 1900s. The event's free, but donations are accepted.
And there's a free classical music concert on Molokai tomorrow.
The Galliard String Quartet performs a free concert at 7 p.m. in the Kulana O'iwi Complex in Kaunakakai. The Kaunakakai Elementary School Student Strings and Choir, under the direction of Bob Underwood, opens the show at 6 p.m., and the concert is part of a two-day Chamber Music Hawaii outreach program featuring the Galliard String Quartet there on Molokai.
Okay, lots of activities tomorrow, May Day.
Yes.
Get out there, no excuse.
Wear my aloha shirt tomorrow.
All right. Derek Malama joins the conversation to take a closer look at some of the events in our community that might be going on under the radar. You can always find out more at our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for The Conversation comes from Haleakala Waldorf School on Maui and Honolulu Waldorf School on Oahu, serving Hawaii's families from infancy with parent-child programs through high school, now accepting applications at both schools.
On this week's On the Media, we examine old and new fronts in the culture wars, including the economy, the Roseanne reboot, and the Apu situation, articulated here by Lisa Simpson.
Something that started decades ago and was applauded and inoffensive is now politically incorrect. What can you do?
On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
This evening at 7.
We have to go, but up tomorrow, more on the latest high-rise planned for Kaka'ako. We'd like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, post comments on Facebook at The Conversation, or tweet us at HI Conversation. And if you missed any of this show or want to find a past one, you can find them all on The Conversation page with links to more information about guests and topics. Just look under Talk Shows for The Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.